Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining me on the Relax Back UK show. This week's topic is sleep, and we cover all sorts of aspects of sleep, and not everything discussed is at all obvious.
But there is a group of people that actually need a little bit of distraction to be able to go to sleep. If they're left alone in silence, what they'll do is they'll have loads of thoughts circling. They may be ruminating about what happened that day, what they're going to do tomorrow. That can cause a lot of anxiety.
My guest is Dr. Faye Baghetti. With Christmas fast approaching, I want to introduce you to a book that draws on the knowledge and experience of guests to the Relax Back UK show. It's called Cut the Crap, Ask the Questions That Matter About Your Health. It asks and answers many health-related questions and encourages the reader to ask their own questions about their own health. It would be a great Christmas gift for anyone interested in their own health or the health of a loved one. Again, it's called Cut the Crap, Ask the Questions That Matter About Your Health, and it's available on Kindle and Amazon. So please do stay tuned for a great show. Thank you. On the media, it seems we've always been told that we don't get enough sleep. We all need more sleep. So I was wondering, is that just a real problem that the population is not getting enough sleep? Or is it just really a rumour put about by people that sell mattresses? So that was my first question to Dr. Baghetti.
Yeah, well, that's certainly the case when people come to see me in clinic, Mike. A lot of people do report being sleep deprived. And one of the things that I really wanted to do was I really wanted to see how big the issue is in the population. So actually, I collaborated with Holiday Inn Express to commission a survey. And in our survey, 54% of people actually said that they were sleep deprived. So that is actually a reasonably big issue when it comes to problems.
Yeah, and so this is not anecdotal. This is a survey that's been done. Okay, not a massive survey, but big enough. And people are saying it's a problem. And you see people every day in your clinic who come for you for help.
Yes, and not just my sleep clinics. People that report other issues such as headache and migraines. Sometimes it's sleep deprivation that's actually feeding into the process and making their illnesses worse.
All right. So I imagine there are an awful lot of strands to sleep, you know, comfortable, whether we're comfortable in bed, we got back pain, whether if the temperature's right, we're under stress, or whether we get our cup of cocoa before we go to sleep, all that sort of thing. So you've done a PhD. What aspect did you look at, and what's your sort of research looking at now? What aspect of all this are you kind of dealing with?
So firstly, to say my PhD was a long time ago now. We're coming to over 10 years. And I worked in neurodegenerative diseases. These are diseases where the nerve cells of our brain start to become damaged and we lose them, and it can create loads of different issues for us. Movement problems or memory problems, dementias or things like Parkinson's disease. And the importance of
Huntington's disease, I believe, is a bit of a speciality for you.
It is indeed, yes. A lot of research has been done on Huntington's disease. But when I was doing my PhD, it was just beginning to be recognised the importance of sleep. Because we used to think, obviously, sleep is produced by the brain. It's an active process. You don't just switch off. There's loads of processes that are happening. But when I was doing my PhD, it was starting to be recognised that actually the sleep issues actually precede the neurodegenerative disorders rather than the other way around. We used to think that you have a disease, your brain is not functioning as well as it should be, so of course your sleep is affected. But now we know there are a multitude of conditions where sleep starts to be affected way before the condition itself starts. And for example, round about the time of my PhD, a big paper came out which showed that actually when we sleep, we clear a protein called amyloid. And amyloid is a very important protein because it's that protein that when it misfolds, it damages cells and it can create the condition that many of your listeners will have heard of, Alzheimer's disease.
Right. Goodness.
Yeah, so
okay. So does this mean that lack of sleep is an early symptom or a cause of some of these things? Or don't we yet quite know?
Yeah, so I think there's a bi-directional relationship. So the lack of sleep is a symptom and a cause, but also you can get yourself in a vicious cycle where you're causing this disease that stops people sleeping. So you'll see people who have dementia, their sleep cycle, especially anyone who's ever cared for somebody with those really difficult illnesses, they'll attest that their sleep cycle is completely disturbed.
Yeah. Goodness me. This is the sort of thing that I can imagine actually getting really quite complicated quite quickly. And it's very interlinked and there's no sort of simple answer to any of this stuff.
Not at all. And I mean, I spoke about a specific protein, but of course, there's many different diseases and they're all caused by different proteins misfolding, different areas of the brain going wrong.
Goodness me. It strikes me that actually this could be the subject for a whole series of shows. So I might have to invite you back at the end to talk about some of these other things. But for now, let's see if we can delve into maybe some of the details and get some good practical help for people that are suffering from not being able to sleep properly. So do you sleep with your phone by your bed?
Sometimes yes, because I'm a doctor and sometimes I do 24 and 48 hours on call where they call me overnight. Now, very interesting thing to say about the phone, because I have really delved into the research of this. One of the big myths that we're told is that blue light affects our sleep. Now, our phone is actually too dim to produce enough light to confuse our brain. And this is a fact. But what is really important, if you are somebody who sleeps with your phone by your bed, is the content that you access. Mm-hmm. The content that you access can, if it's stress-inducing content, can produce a hormone called cortisol. And cortisol is both a stress hormone and an alertness hormone. And this makes complete sense because you want to be alert if you're under stress. This is a survival response. And actually, if somebody calls me in the middle of the night as a medic, I become very alert very, very quickly, much more so than if I'm to be woken up in the middle of the night for another reason. Let's just say my kids want to ask where their water bottle is, which happens, you know. But if somebody calls me as a medic, usually it's people having seizures or emergencies like that, I'm alert very, very quickly. And that's because of this cortisol stress response. But what you don't want to do, you don't want to be accessing stressful information right before you go to sleep, because you don't want that to affect your sleep pattern. So it's okay to use your phone. You can listen to a podcast. You can listen to some music. In fact, we've created some really useful tracks that people can use, that people can listen to. But I don't want people to be engaging in sort of things that will make them feel really anxious.
Okay. So it's kind of what you do with your phone, not the fact that the phone is there emitting light. And, you know, obviously the radio waves, the microwaves, actually, they're not microwaves, are they? They're whatever waves the telephone uses are going into the phone and out of the phone while you're asleep. This is not the problem.
Exactly. It's
okay,
the content.
Interesting. Okay, another question for you, the sleep expert. Have you got a TV in your bedroom?
No, we have. I did growing up, though. I did growing up. But now, I mean, most people, I would say, have tablets and things like that. An interesting fact is actually a lot of my patients need to either watch TV or listen to something to be able to fall asleep. I'm sure many of the listeners will be able to relate to that. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes a lot of people are told that this is wrong, must not do that, must go to sleep in complete silence. But there is a group of people that actually need a little bit of distraction to be able to go to sleep. If they're left alone in silence, what they'll do is they'll have loads of thoughts circling. They may be ruminating about what happened that day, what they're going to do tomorrow. That can cause a lot of anxiety. And there's some studies that show that actually listening to a bit of content can cause something called psychological detachment. and allow the brain to be able to wind down. So I'm not against people watching TV if they want to, watching podcasts, listening to music, as long as it's not overly stimulating. Most people report that when they do watch TV, they tend to watch things that they've watched before, things like, you know, reruns of old comedy shows and things like that.
So, yeah, nothing too difficult to take in, for sure. What about reading? Because I often read, and it's a habit I've always had, really. I'll read a couple of pages before I go to sleep, and I really like that. It seems to help me. What do your patients say about reading?
Happy for everybody to do that if they so wish. Sometimes for some people it can be more stimulating because you have to sort of hold a book and be engaged into actually reading the words. Whereas if you're passively listening to something with your eyes closed, that actually takes a bit less effort. People do stay up all hours of the morning to finish a good book as well. So again, it's the content that's important. I've done it myself, I must say. I have stayed up in the early hours of the morning really reading because I want to get to the end of the book. So for me, I would say listening to something calming works better.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, of the patients that you see, you know, on a daily basis, and so presumably they come to you saying, you know, I can't sleep. What are the sort of main reasons, or are there any, what are the top reasons that people are having trouble?
Yeah, so I mean, I diagnose a variety of sleep conditions. So being able to sleep is just one aspect of things. And you can have different types of insomnia. For example, some people are not able to get to sleep. Some people find that they have something called sleep maintenance insomnia, which means they get to sleep, but then they wake up multiple times into the night, or they wake up too early and they can't get back to sleep. So they get an early onset waking. So it's all about assessing people and finding where they can sort of improve things. We also see a variety of other conditions where people do abnormal behaviors during sleep, sort of sleepwalking or acting out their dreams, or they may have seizures. So we see a whole variety of things.
Is sleepwalking actually that common?
Yes, it's actually very common in children, and most children would outgrow it, but it does persist in a small fraction of the adult population. I think it's about 1% or so. But yes, it's more common in a sleep clinic, I'd imagine, and the people that I see.
Okay. Now, sometimes, and this is only occasionally, so it's not really a problem for me, but it does interest me. Sometimes I feel like I've slept fine, so I've got no recollection of not sleeping or waking up in the night, and I get up and I feel tired. So it appears to me that I've slept well, but I feel tired like the next morning. Is that something that patients of yours complain of, or am I just occasionally a bit weird?
No, I think that is quite a common experience. And what I try to do if I'm doing a clinic, I differentiate between tiredness and fatigue and excessive sleepiness. What would be concerning for me much more would be if somebody is very, very sleepy during the day. It's okay to feel tired. We go through sort of ups and downs in our lives. We may have more energy and less energy. But what really concerns me, if people feel very, very sleepy and if they fall asleep in unusual situations, okay, sort of at work, talking to people, it's okay to feel a little bit sleepy. I have a scale that I do on people, and I know what the ordinary sleep deprived population would say, but there are some people that are very likely to fall asleep even when driving, which is actually a big red flag for me. But then if they are doing all those things, then I really need to have a think about their sleep, because sometimes people's sleep cycle can be really disturbed in that they have no memory of anything overnight, any wake-ups, but actually there can be loads of stuff happening that means their sleep pattern is not very restorative.
Okay, all right. So it could be a function of sleep. Could that be a symptom of, you know, something else, some other sort of disease which might be a bit more sinister?
I mean, it depends. Feeling tired or just falling asleep?
Just falling asleep all the time.
Falling asleep, yes, it can be. It can be. So that's why it's important for people to get checked out. I would say if people fall asleep in unusual situations, they should go see their doctor. The most common reasons why this happens are actually not very sinister at all. I'd say the top one would be something like sleep apnea, but people feel they've slept through, but actually they kind of get a micro airway obstruction. So that causes a tiny little wake up of a few seconds that they don't remember. But what that does, it stops them getting into the deeper stages of sleep. So their sleep is not very restorative. So they can sleep for 8 hours. And then when my respiratory colleagues actually deal with that, when they measure their oxygen levels, they'll see that their oxygen levels have dropped 100 times during the night and they had 100 of these micro wakes. But yeah, if you're feeling very, very sleepy like that, then I would say you should go see your GP.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sometimes you hear about people almost brag about it. Oh, I don't need much sleep. And there's the classic, you know, Margaret Thatcher, she had 4 hours sleep a night. And then kind of in more recent times, Elon Musk says, well, I work 16 hours a day. So, you know, he must be in the sort of 4 hours a night sleeping. Are these people kind of living on borrowed time? Can some people do with less sleep, or are they just lying? Actually, they need 8 hours sleep, you know.
Great question. So some people do need less sleep than others. Okay, so we always have this average of 8 hours, but actually some people will be okay on 6 and some people will need up to 10 hours. And actually we do kind of, in our society, we do tend to kind of punish these people somewhat. These 10 hours long sleepers that I sometimes see in clinic who are perpetually tired, because, you know, we just really restrict their sleep schedule through work. So some people will naturally need less sleep. I am against the people, I feel people should sleep as much as they naturally want for the most part. I don't think they should restrict their sleep to target some sort of productivity or sort of social kudos or whatever else it might be. We certainly know on a population level that if people don't get enough sleep, their risk of certain conditions like dementia increases. Of course, when your risk increases, you might well be lucky and not have this condition, or you may be unlucky despite getting good sleep all your life and have this condition. It's never a sort of direct relationship, but I would be against the people restricting their sleep on purpose. These are the people that we try to target when people do sleep campaigns and saying you should get good sleep. Whereas in fact, the people that tend to get very anxious about not having enough sleep are people who are suffering with insomnia. And actually, as long as you're trying hard to get enough sleep, I'm actually not as worried as the people who are sort of sleep restricting themselves on purpose.
Right. Okay. So have you ever come across someone that can function perfectly well for years on this 4 hours sleep a night? Does that person exist?
If they're functioning so, so well, then they probably wouldn't go see a doctor. There have been reported sort of in studies, sort of 5 hour sleep, etc. But they are rare. They've also done genetic analysis and looked at certain genetic traits that make it more likely to happen. But I would say somebody functioning on 5 hours of sleep and being perfectly, that's their natural point, is actually quite rare. I think 6, 6.5 up to 10 would be the most common.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Can you die from lack of sleep?
Yes. If people sleep, I mean, people can sleep restrict in terms of torture. And actually, if someone stops sleeping, I think they can die within the region of 7 days. And I don't know much more about that, I must say, because it's not something I really delve into. But yeah, you can. And actually, we do also have neurodegenerative conditions where people stop sleeping, but it also is part of that condition that causes the adverse effects.
So sleep is a vital part of our being. Now, tonight, I think it's a full moon. It's a super moon, isn't it? Now, is this term lunatic, which is obviously an old-fashioned term, is that based on any science? Does the moon affect us and our sleep? Or affect us in other ways? You know, is there any science behind this?
So yeah, it is a super moon, so that means that the moon is going to look extra big because it's at the closest point to the Earth. And certainly, quite a few people report that they are affected by sort of moon cycles in general. This is something that I looked into in the survey that I created with Holiday Inn Express, and we got about a third of Brits said that the moon affects the way they sleep. Now, there have been quite a few theories about this. One is the gravitational pull, but whilst that can affect tides, this doesn't actually have a large effect on the human body. There's other sort of theories that it's brighter, so brightness might stop people sleeping. But again, it's a bit like the phone. The brightness of the moon, even when it is a super moon, is actually nothing compared to the electric lights that we have in our houses. Now, they really disturb sleep. So actually, electric lights will disturb sleep a lot more than the super moon and the phone does. But my personal theory would be that it has quite a big psychological effect on people. Now, that doesn't mean that this is not real or somehow made up. But for example, when I'm on call at the hospital, I find it really hard to sleep. Even when people don't call me, I do sometimes have the occasional night where I get no phone calls at all. And these are the great nights, but I still toss and turn just because I know I'm on call. I know that I might be called. And I think psychology is a big part of being able to wind down and go to sleep.
Do
And
you get more calls on a full moon night?
I haven't got any data on that, but I should really look into it, I guess. I'm not sure.
Because I, so I, when there's a big, beautiful full moon, I mean, actually, I'm sure it puts me in a better mood, you know, because you can look at the moon, you think, God, you know, that's wonderful, that's delightful,
Yes,
and
well, actually, the
I might
survey
even sleep
showed,
better.
yes. So the survey showed 30% of people affect the moon affects the way they sleep, but only about 50% of those said they if I it made their sleep worse. So some people it makes their sleep better, some people it makes their sleep worse. And actually, when it comes to sleep and things like that, it's a very personal issue and a very you get different effects on different people.
Sure. No, I can imagine that. All right. So, I mean, we've been talking about sleep, and then I've got 101 other questions I'd love to ask you. But perhaps we should home in a little bit on some, you know, practical advice that if people are listening and thinking, you know, actually, I'm not sleeping that well. Let's have a few aspects of practical advice I can try, and it might just help me sleep a bit better. So, can you kind of come up with a few sort of good practical things for people to try?
Yes, I've got a couple of things. So the key thing for me as somebody who does sleep clinics is to have a consistent sleep and wake schedule. And this is because to wake up and be alert, your body needs to produce that alertness hormone cortisol, which is also the stress hormone that we mentioned. And to go to sleep, you produce a sort of sleep-inducing hormone called melatonin. Now, the brain gives instructions to produce these hormones, but there's a lag. There's a lag of a few hours. So the brain works better when it can predict when you're going to wake up and when you're going to go to sleep. It can't just respond to your needs because then you'll have a lag. So it works better when you have a consistent schedule because otherwise, if your schedule's very erratic and sometimes you wake up at 6 a.m., sometimes you wake up midday, your brain is like, whoa, when am I going to produce this cortisol to make you feel alert? So you wake up, you're going to feel sluggish for several hours. Whereas if you wake up the same time each day, then you're going to feel better that same time each day. And same for melatonin. This is why we have jet lag when we, travel around. And there's also social jet lag where people stay up really late in the weekend and suddenly Monday is a bit of a whoa,
Bit of a
what's
shock.
happened? Exactly, a shock to the system. So that's my number one, consistent sleep schedule. And the number two would have to be thinking about the content of what you access before bed. And this doesn't, I don't, so I'm not against technology and pro sort of anti-tech. It's more about how it affects you and whether it makes you feel stressed or not. Like I said, you can stay up reading a book many hours into the night, or you can be, I don't know, scrolling through social media. We do know that a lot of people use their phones before sleep. And usually it's very easy to sort of start browsing your emails at work. I don't know, looking at TikTok, next thing you know, you're reading about the next global disaster that's going to happen. And that's not the best thing for you when you're trying to wind down. So if you have a habit like that, then I would suggest replacing it with something better. And this is, in a way, what I wanted to do recently. So I collaborated with Professor Green, who many people would know. and Holiday Inn Express to create a set of
tracks. Just tell us who Professor Green is, because a lot of people don't know. And I must admit, before this chat, I didn't know.
So he's a very talented musician, and he makes music. And what we've done is we've used his skills in music production and music creation and my neuroscience expertise to create a set of tracks. And we actually used some sounds that, you know, we have been shown to be very relaxing. They're called ASMR sounds that people have really been using to go to sleep, and there's emerging research behind them. We coupled those with something called binaural beats, which have been shown again in science to reduce anxiety. And we created a set of tracks. They're called
What does ASMR stand for?
Oh, it stands for Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response. And actually, what it essentially means, not to use really difficult language, it means like some people, when they listen to music or certain sounds, they can get a certain tingling sensation at the back of the brain and the skull and going down to the spine. Think of it as like sometimes when you hear really good music, you get these musical chills, you can get a sort of sensory response. But science shows that, you know, a lot of people use them to relax, even if they don't have that specific response. So we thought we'd get all those things together, use the expertise, and create something called the Restful Rhythms playlist that's actually available today on Spotify. So people can access that for free, listen to this. And if you do use your phone before bed, then think about, is this a better thing to associate with sleep?
And see. All right, is it just a load of sounds, or if I was to listen to it, I'd say, right, that's music.
So it's music. It's got different frequencies from the binaural beats, and then it has tracks by Professor Green. So it's got some soothing vocals on top, and it guides you. It's a cross. The way I describe it is between music and meditation. That's how it feels to me, and I've been listening to those for the past couple of weeks, and I really like them.
Okay, so there is actually research and peer-reviewed published papers showing that this kind of ASMR is useful, is there?
It's a new and emerging phenomenon, but there have been at least 60 studies on it.
Okay. All right. Are there any places where people could look, resources where people could look that might explain some of this stuff to the layman? You know, if someone thinks, okay, this is kind of interesting, I'd like to look at something which is written from the backing of published papers, you know, a good information resource.
So in terms of published papers, they can be difficult to read if somebody hasn't got science expertise.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. So
there is a book that I recommend by one of my colleagues, Professor Russell Foster. He's at the University of Oxford, which I'm affiliated with, and I work at the Oxford Hospital. And if he ever does a talk, I would say go to that. I've been to a couple of his talks, and he's written a book. It's called Lifetime, I think. Yeah. So I would recommend that.
All right. No, that sounds very good. Thank you. All right. So we've been through a lot of stuff. We've spoken about sleep, how some people have difficulties with sleep, some good tips to help with sleep, and then ending with this ASMR idea. And a lot of people do this, do they, already?
Yes, a lot of people. Actually, in 2023, it was the most highly searched term on YouTube, which that's what really led me to think there is a need to create that kind of playlist. Because actually, when you go on YouTube, yeah, sure, you're searching ASMR, but YouTube has like news articles and, I don't know, true crime documentaries. So I think it's best to be going somewhere direct to be listening to those kind of sounds.
Yeah. Okay. So, and people really find these, it sounds like they do, really find these sounds useful to help you get to sleep.
Yes, they do. And I think in other surveys, I think it was something like 98% of people, the reason they use them is to wind down and to reduce anxiety.
Yeah. Okay. So let me ask, because as a doctor, you have to work nights, stressful job, get up if you're on call, start working straight away. All the things that are bad to do from the discussion we've just had. So do you have any advice for other members of your profession? You know, because I can imagine doctors really suffering from not being able to sleep.
It is getting better, I must say. So we have certain rules and regulations. For example, I do 24-hour shifts or 48-hour shifts. And if I can't get a minimum 4 hours rest, I get the next day off. And most of the time, I actually have the next day off anyway, because we know we're going to be called multiple times overnight. So it's getting better. I think shift work does have an effect on the brain and the body. We all know that. We all feel that. But I think it's a bit about like not. And I think we take that on board. Our profession is very sort of self-sacrificial, and we really want to help others. But I think it's important to just look after ourselves and make sure the right things are in place. We don't just push all doctors beyond their limits.
No, I think you're right. Okay. So if people want to, I'm glad about that, by the way. I would much rather be seen by a doctor who's not suffering from lack of sleep.
You and me both. You and me both.
All right, so look, if people are listening to this and think, right, I want to give this ASMR thing a go. You said it's on Spotify. How can they find it?
So it's called the Restful Rhythms playlist, and it's on you can find that if you search Spotify. And
Okay.
there's more information and links on holidayinexpress.com.
All right. All this is very interesting and also, I think, very useful for a lot of people. So, Faye, many thanks for chatting.
Thank you for having me.
A big thanks to my guest this week, Dr. Faye Baghetti, talking about many different aspects of sleep. And of course, a big thank you to you for listening and have a healthy week until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.